A news reporter, her editor, and a duck walk into a bar. The bartender says, "What are you drinking?" The duck says, "Give me a Grey Goose. I've been telling these journalists some of the best jokes of 2014. Here's NPR's Elizabeth Blair.
First, my favorite joke this year. It's by a real charmer from Villarica, Georgia, named Rodman. It's about his confusion over the checkout line.
"I don't know who started this little programmer. You check yourself out, but, that is not what I'm trying to do. I'm a shopper. I came in as a shopper. I want to leave as a shopper, but, yeah, because they trick you to be an employee and get on the clock that day. You don't really have, you're not ready to be a worker at a grocery store. You don't have no kind of qualifications at all. But the lady tricked me. She's like, there's no waiting over here, sir. And, you know, I go over there and she just walked the hell away. And I'm like, whoa."
Rodman won this year's Last Comic Standing on NBC. Co-executive producer Paige Hurwitz says his checkout line joke killed.
"It was so funny because he was able to take something seemingly mundane and trivial and just blow it up into the most hilarious story and hilarious joke.
Hurwitz says in past seasons of Last Comic Standing, comedians have mined the same material for jokes.
"For a while, there were a zillion jokes about ADD and, you know, there were a zillion jokes about, you know, online dating. And this season, we didn't see that. We saw that there was really quite a variety of material and styles."
Hurwitz says one of her favorites this year was a wicked funny Perversion of History by comedian Tracy Ashley.
"Could you imagine Oprah Winfrey in the Underground Railroad? If you look under your chairs!
Another female comedian made it to the top of Caroline Hirsch's list this year. Hirsch owns the comedy club Caroline's on Broadway. She singles out this year's Comedy Central special by Whitney Cummings.
"She looks like a Vogue model on stage, and she's just so smart and bright. And when you put that beautiful face together with what comes out of her mouth, I think it's even funnier."
"It's not even weird, though, the guys think about sex. Like, we've accepted it so much as a society now. You know, it's so institutionalized. We've embraced it, you know. Like, there's just a restaurant called Hooters. That's just a restaurant. Whereas there would never be a restaurant like that for women, you know, called, like, Dongs."
As a booker for Conan, J.P. Buck is deep into who's got the best jokes on any given day. Buck figures on average he watches about 50 stand-up performances per week. So when he says,
"Bill Burr is the best working stand-up comedian today."
Comedy lovers, listen up. Bill Burr is a storyteller. This is from a long joke he did for his Netflix special about old people getting in trouble.
"What did you think they thought? I mean, and I gotta be honest with you, too. People were too hard on that Clippers guy, man. I'm telling you. For an 80-year-old white guy, that wasn't that bad. All right? Dude, he didn't drop the N-word once. That's unbelievable for an 80-year-old white guy. The N-word should have been carpet bombed through that whole tape. He never said it once."
Leave it to the professional fool to make the most sense. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
Now for our annual year-end series, The Ones That Got Away. This is where we look at some of the best entertainment that we overlooked this year. The British political psychological thriller The Honorable Woman was one of the most critically acclaimed TV shows of 2014. The 8-episode series aired on the Sundance Channel. This month, Netflix began streaming the series. NPR's Elizabeth Blair tells us more.
The chilling first scene gets you right off the bat. A businessman is having lunch in a restaurant with his two children. The table is laid with china. The waiter places a roll on each of their plates with silver tongs. First the little boys, then the little girls. When he gets to the man, he raises the tongs and stabs him in the throat. Blood splatters on the tablecloth. Drops hit the little girl's face.
"Who do you trust?"
29 years later, the little girl is the stylish, powerful Nessa Stein.
"How do you know?"
Nessa and her brother have inherited their father's company. He was an Israeli arms dealer, and we never really find out who killed him.
"It's a wonder we trust anyone at all."
The international whodunit is set in motion. The riddles are everywhere. There's a mysterious Palestinian nanny, an Israeli family friend who might be dealing with terrorists, a world-weary British spy, straight out of John le Carré.
Miss Lantham, why are you lying to me?
Oh, honey, trust me. I can get any man to do that.
He's not buying it.
The truth is, I don't believe you've even met Samia Machal, and I don't believe your name's Rebecca Lantham.
It's not. She's actually an undercover FBI agent. In The Honorable Woman, British and American intelligence play a deliciously tense game with each other. Everybody's got an agenda. In the middle of it all is Nessa Stein, who is now head of the family business, which is no longer weapons, but communications technology between Israel and the West Bank. She and her brother hope their investment will help bring peace to the region.
In our view, amongst the greatest threats to Israel is Palestinian poverty. Terror thrives in poverty. It dies in wealth.
Conflicts in the Middle East are so complex and sensitive. Actress Maggie Gyllenhaal says before taking the part of Nessa Stein, she had some reservations.
So many people don't know very much about this area of the world, and it's really complicated, and it goes back so far.
The Honorable Woman's writer and director, Hugo Blick, has been curious about the long history of the Middle East ever since 1982, when the Israeli ambassador to Britain was gunned down in front of a London hotel. Blick was a teenager at the time.
Suddenly I felt that the world that seemed so distant was there on our sidewalks, on our streets. His blood spilled there by, you know, those assailants from a very distant place. And here it was affecting us.
Since then, Hugo Blick has traveled to Israel many times. He says he's always struck by Jerusalem, a dense city segmented by religions.
It's like the kernel of our international identities being struggled over in this very, very small and compressed space.
Blick thought, what if he created a single character who embodied those struggles? The result was Nessa Stein.
A woman who was at odds with herself, engaged in the Israeli-Palestinian irreconciliation, their irreconcilable differences, attempts to make some progress towards reconciliation, and yet in herself, unreconciled to her own past and to her own personality.
And that's what hooked Maggie Gyllenhaal.
She's very intelligent. She's graceful. She doesn't apologize for that grace and power and intelligence. But then underneath that is, you know, all the opposites of those things.
She can be dangerously naive. She's a binge drinker who's free with her body and an emotional wreck who shares a secret with the Palestinian nanny.
Yes, you can. We're strong, you and I.
What if they find out?
They won't.
They might.
They will never find out. I promise.
As the TV series progresses, we learn a lot more about the relationship between Nessa Stein and the Palestinian nanny, Attica. It would be giving away too much to say what. But Maggie Gyllenhaal says Attica could also be the honorable woman in the title.
Attica also is a personal, emotional kind of reflection of geopolitics.
Nessa learns a lot from Attica. We do too. Hugo Blick wants the honorable woman to give this seemingly intractable conflict a human dimension. As a critic for the London Evening Standard put it, once an episode is finished, its themes linger on. Even the news starts to look different. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
What do a woman freed from a religious cult, a crooked lawyer, and TV's longest-serving late-night host have in common? NPR TV critic Eric Deccan says they're all part of the hottest trends in television for 2015. Here's his look at the issues and series that will transform TV in the new year.
Kimmy Schmidt has survived years in a dehumanizing cult that told her the world was destroyed by nuclear fire. But surviving her first interview on The Today Show after she and her friends were rescued from that cult, well, that might be even tougher.
Ladies, you've been given an amazing second chance at life. People have donated thousands of dollars to the Mole Women Fund.
And we are so grateful. But honestly, we don't love that name.
So Mole Women, what happens next? What do you do now?
I go with you now. Yes, I'm married to you.
No, Gretchen, no.
The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is a new series from Tina Fey and Robert Carlock, who worked together on Fey's NBC series 30 Rock. The program was made for NBC but sold to Netflix, which picked up the canceled show before it even aired on the network. It's a growing trend, TV shows moving online from more traditional starting points. Yahoo will continue to produce new episodes of NBC's canceled comedy Community, and a show originally developed for FX, the superhero series Powers, will debut not on FX, but on the PlayStation Network. Yes, there will be an original TV series made just for a video game console. But the biggest sea change in television this year comes courtesy of this announcement.
I said, when this show stops being fun, I will retire 10 years later.
David Letterman, TV's longest-serving late-night host, officially retires May 20th. But he's already changing television, prompting Stephen Colbert to leave his Colbert Report to take over Letterman's Late Show, which made room at Comedy Central for a new voice.
Hi, I'm Larry Wilmore, host of the new Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore.
Who?
Larry Wilmore. I'm the host of the Nightly Show.
I thought you said it was a Daily Show.
Well, it is a Daily Show at night.
Larry Wilmore, known as the Daily Show's senior black correspondent, takes over Colbert's time slot with the Nightly Show on January 19. Wilmore's show was originally called The Minority Report, but they changed it after learning the 2002 film of the same name would be made into, you guessed it, a TV pilot. Still, Wilmore will be the only African-American hosting a late-night entertainment show in 2015. Along with Colbert and new Late Late Show host James Corden, he's expected to bring lots of fresh voices to a big block of TV's late-night neighborhood. And there's some other big goodbyes coming in 2015.
The farewell season of Parks and Recreation comes to you from the distant future. Ah! The year 2017.
Good Lord.
Take my hand. Let's get into bed like the Notebook.
NBC's Parks and Recreation begins its final season January 13th. It's among several TV shows taking a final lap this year, including CBS's Two and a Half Men and AMC's Mad Men. But I'm really going to savor the final season of FX's show about a gunslinging federal marshal, Justified. Mostly because of scenes like this one, featuring Marshal Raylan Givens taking stolen documents from his bitter rival, bank robber Boyd Crowder.
Found some items lying on the side of the road I believe belonged to our mutual friend. I took it upon myself to ensure their safe return. And I'm just following my instincts, kind of like Howard Powers slipping you a word.
Well, I slip a Glock in my holster every morning. So when you hand me them items, do it slow, or I'll shoot you.
In a TV world filled with Honey Boo Boos and Duck Dynasties, it's a pleasure to watch a show set in the South with sharp, smart characters. That's not, however, the best description for a guy at the heart of another series, which just happens to be cable TV's most anticipated new show.
Traffic accident? Better call Saul. Confess to a homicide? What are you waiting for? Hi, welcome to the law offices of Saul Goodman and Associates.
Saul Goodman, also known as Walter White's shady lawyer from Breaking Bad, gets his own spin-off series on AMC. It debuts over two nights on February 8th and 9th, showing how small-time lawyer Jimmy McGill becomes the full-on sleazebag that Breaking Bad fans love, with a real talent for recruiting new clients.
I'm number one on your speed dial, right next to your weed dealer.
Please call me Jimmy.
I think I'd look guilty if I hired a lawyer.
It's getting arrested that makes people look guilty.
Who could say no to that? Ultimately, the word which best sums up TV in 2015 is more. More new series in unexpected places, more new voices in late night, and more high-quality shows than anyone can keep up with. Except maybe a highly motivated TV critic. So if you thought TV was good last year, you might want to buckle up, because the pace only gets faster and more fun in 2015. I'm Eric Deggan.
You probably won't realize that you recognize Christine Cavanaugh until you hear her. The actress gave voice to popular cartoon and film characters throughout the 1990s, and last month she passed away. NPR's Jasmine Garst has this remembrance.
Pigs are definitely stupid.
Excuse me.
That is the unmistakably lovable voice of a heroic little pig from the 1995 film Babe. And it's the voice of actress Christine Cavanaugh.
I'm a large white.
Yes, that's your breed, dear. What's your name?
I don't know.
Well, what did your mother call you to tell you apart from your brothers and sisters?
She called us all Babe.
Cavanaugh did not start off as a voice actress. She had small parts in TV shows like Cheers. but her big break came in 1991 when she joined the cast of the Emmy Award-winning cartoon Rugrats as the cowardly Chucky Finster.
I'm not scared. I just don't want to be potty trained, that's all. It's just not right.
Don't you dummies know anything? Everybody who's anybody is potty trained.
Well, not me. I'm never gonna do it. They can't make me. I'm gonna wear my diapers forever, and nobody is gonna stop me.
She was doing a slight variation on her normal voice to play Chucky, but it was her voice.
Paul Germain is one of the creators and producers of Rugrats.
Christine was able to convey so much emotion in the character and so much pain and change and emotion. It was just amazing.
The show received critical praise, and until SpongeBob came along, it was Nickelodeon's longest-running cartoon. In a statement to NPR, the network said Christine gave voice to one of the most beloved characters in Nickelodeon's history in Chucky Finster. In 1996, she joined the cast of Dexter's Laboratory as Dexter himself, a child who is a genius scientist with an ambiguous foreign accent. Here's Dexter firing his own sister from his laboratory.
Dee Dee, how long have we known each other? Our whole lives, you say? Not in truth, never. Or should I say, you never knew me? Because if you did, you would know I am a soul who requires peace, quiet, and most importantly, solitude.
Dan Sarto is the publisher and editor-in-chief at Animation World Network, a website about animation and visual effects. He says a voice actor can make or break a cartoon character.
The voices are so critical. They make the characters, and some of our most iconic and famous characters were made that way because of the voice actor behind the character.
Kavanaugh retired from voice acting in 2001. She died on December 22nd. The cause of death has not yet been reported. Christine Kavanaugh was 51. Jasmine Garst, NPR News.